This is Sportscaster.com's Open Mic with Johnny Kane on 760 WJR, featuring sports commentary and stories brought to you by the most compelling rising stars in sports broadcasting. Here's your host, Johnny Kane.
One of my favorite parts about Open Mic is hearing from so many new voices, and you'll hear quite a few on today's show. The idea of Sportscaster, of course, is to provide aspiring broadcasters a lane, you know, a place where they can be heard. And our first guest today is a young man from Grosse Pointe South High School. His name is Robert Hindelang. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, it's good to have you on. I know you've had some experience doing some things through Sportscaster, including working on Drive to the Game. What was that experience like for you on a Friday night?
It was a really cool experience. Our team was on a win streak there. We were probably playing the best we played all season. It was a good game, and it was a great learning experience and one of the best experiences of my life.
That's great, man. I love to hear that, you know, seriously. You know, I love working in sports, I mean, more than anything in the world. And for you, when did you know, you know, hey, I really want to pursue this as something I want to do through high school and maybe beyond?
I'd say it was like 5 or 6. I found sports and I started watching it more closely. And then around 8, I was like, these guys who call the game, they can know all the players and call the game and get paid and go to all the games. I'm like, that's what I want to do. That sounds amazing. And it's been one of my favorite things to do. And I try to get as much information about sports and learn as much as I can daily.
Yeah, that's great, man. I was kind of the same too. You know, I remember being younger and just thinking like, man, we could do this for a living. That would be, even if they didn't pay us, you know, that'd be okay too. But I guess it works a little bit better when you do actually have a reward at the end. What kinds of things have you been able to do at Grosse Pointe South? Like what type of programs do they have?
So I've been able to do the school news here at South. I do the sports section on it most days a week, and I've done the weather a couple of times. I'm hopefully going to call some of the basketball games this year.
Nice. That'll be great. You're only a sophomore, right?
Yes.
What would you say, like in a perfect world, once you graduate high school, what would you like to do after that?
Probably call golf, maybe like take Jim Nance's job. I love golf. I started playing a couple of years ago. I'm on the golf team here at South, and that's one of my dreams to someday call golf or baseball.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, golf is a very unique sport in calling it, especially when you listen to like big tournaments. Even I like listening to golf on the radio, even how they go to the different towers. And then you mentioned baseball. I love baseball. I think it's the greatest sport we have. I also love golf too, but baseball is fabulous. You're a big Tigers fan. Give me just kind of a sense of, because I've saw you at a couple games. How long have you been following the Tigers, and can we win it all next year?
Yeah, I've been following Tigers my entire life. Baseball is my first love. I went to the World Series when I was 2 back in 2012. Yeah. And I think if we get a couple more arms, especially with Jackson Jobe going to be out a while and the uncertainty about Skubal, if we can get 1 or 2 quality arms and maybe another arm in the bullpen, just with the way the bullpen ended last year, maybe another bat, I think that can really help. And I think we need some more solid infielding, probably solid third baseman with the bat.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Well, very good, man. I'm glad we got to catch up on the show. And I wish you all the best as you go through the rest of your school year. And then obviously in the years ahead, having you involved in Sportscaster. And I'm glad we got a chance to catch up.
Thank you. Me too.
All right. Robert Hindelang, sophomore there at Grosse Pointe South High School, an aspiring sports broadcaster getting his start here on Open Mic, making his debut. I want to get to our next guest now, Taryn Fritching, who's been on our show in the past. Taryn's another high school student from Troy Athens High School. And she offers a commentary on the fastest growing sports in the world. Now, I can guess the first, but pretty fascinating to hear the top 3.
Hey, everyone, I'm Taryn Fritching, and today we're diving into something you might not hear much about in the hallways, but probably see all over TikTok and parks around Michigan, the fastest growing sports in the world. A new article from Earth Golf called The 10 Fastest Growing Sports, Why They're Booming and What's Next, says these sports are exploding because they're easy to start, fun to play, and way more social than traditional sports like football or baseball. But what's cool is most of these new sports actually have a long history. Let's start with the biggest one, pickleball. Pickleball actually dates back to 1965 when three dads, Joel Pritchard, Bill Bell, and Barney McCollum, invented it on Bainbridge Island, Washington. They were just trying to keep their kids busy during the summer using ping pong paddles and a wiffle ball. Fast forward almost 60 years, and it's now America's fastest growing sport. There are over 19.8 million players in the U.S. There are now 68,000 plus courts nationwide, and new ones are popping up in schools and rec centers everywhere. What's the driving boom? Accessibility. It's simple to learn, low impact, and can be played indoors or outdoors. In other words, it's perfect for all ages. And lately, more high school students are playing competitively, not just recreationally. Next up, paddle. You might have seen it on social media. It looks like tennis, but it's played on a smaller court surrounded by glass walls. It started in Mexico in 1969 when a businessman named Enrique Corsurea added walls to his home tennis court. From there, it took off in Spain and Argentina, and now it's spreading throughout the U.S. Right now, there are about 25 million paddle players worldwide, and experts predict a 26% annual growth rate for new courts through 2025. In the U.S. alone, paddle has grown from fewer than 30 courts in 2020 to over 600 by 2024. That's a 20 times jump in just a few years. What makes it special? It's easy to play, fast-paced, and extremely social. The perfect blend for younger athletes who like action but want a sport that feels more inclusive and community-driven. Now, not all fast-growing sports are casual. Some are just more intense. Mixed martial arts, otherwise known as MMA, including jiu-jitsu and kickboxing, has exploded in popularity thanks to UFC fighters like Conor McGregor and Amanda Nunes. MMA began developing as a modern sport in the 1990s, combining wrestling, boxing, and martial arts disciplines. Since the 2010s, the global MMA market has more than tripled, and youth training programs are popping up across Michigan. It's not just about fighting. It's about discipline, fitness, and mental strength. So what does all this mean for us, high school students and athletes? These sports are proof that athletic trends are changing fast. Young players don't have to stick to the big four: football, basketball, baseball, and hockey. Schools that add sports like pickleball or paddle early could become leaders in new athletic programs. Students who try something new might discover skills that translate to college opportunities later. And coaches who stay open to these trends can build inclusive teams that bring more students into sports. So when you look at the future of sports, remember this. The next big thing might not be something new. It might just be something rediscovered. From backyards in the 60s to national tournaments today, these sports prove that passion and creativity can make anything grow. Which of these fast-growing sports, pickleball, paddle, or maybe even MMA, do you think could become the next big high school or college sport in Michigan?
Great question, Taryn, and great commentary. Pickleball is on my list. I have quite a few friends who have taken up the sport. Paddle, I could see getting into as well. As for MMA, I think that's more of a spectator sport for me anyhow. That was Taryn Fritching from Troy Athens High School. Our next guest is a regular on the show. I think I'd call him a regular. Carter Lutz from the University of Miami. A really interesting interview you did this week, Carter, with Reg, the beer guy. And I think it gives us a little bit better perspective on vending. What can you tell us about your interview with Reg?
We all know vendors are all over the stadium and at every stadium, but Reg is out here doing something different and trying to be unique, trying to be the first person ever to work every NFL stadium and every MLB ballpark. It's a special story, and we were able to get into the nitty-gritty, kind of see where his head's at, how it all started, what he hopes to accomplish, really the overall picture, because it's something he's had to dedicate a lot of time and a lot of his life to over the past couple of years, and it only started really over COVID. So it's a special story. He's on the right track. And I mean, he's 5 years into this thing, maybe a little bit more. And he's starting to gain a following and doing a good job.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating to me because, you know, obviously I spend the majority of my life in ballparks and different arenas. And every vendor is different. you know, like they're not all the same. So it's like, you know, bare hair, you know, depending on which part of the country you hear these accents, and some guys that really put dedication into preparing a hot dog to your liking. But I just find it fascinating. You know, it's like something that maybe a lot of people don't think about, like the employees that are working these different stadiums. But a guy like Reg, like what a dream to say, you know what? I think I would like to be at every ballpark or NFL stadium, like across the country, like meeting different people. Like I just find it, the whole thing fascinating.
Oh, it's terrific. And how he talks about the way that he's meeting new people and the importance of that. He highlighted that number one, but you mentioned it. Here at Sportscaster, we're trying to get unique and different perspectives. And for him, you know, vendors are a part of all of our lives. When we go to the ballpark, when we go to the games, we don't think about their day to day, what's going on with them. And so for him, he's been able to see all these ballparks. People make it a life mission to get to every MLB ballpark. And he's out there working them, really fully invested in all of these stadiums and really a part of the stadiums.
Yeah, I think it's great. Hey, to your point, Carter, you know, at the end of the day, we're all sports fans. And if you make it down to Comerica Park, which I know you do, and a lot of our listeners do, a lot of the ushers are retirees that, you know, love the game so much, they can stay involved, you know, in being around sports. And then vending would be another layer to that. These folks that you see, I see a lot of the same people, same faces, always with a smile on their face, always bringing the stuff around to make the experience that much more enjoyable for the fans that are there. So very cool for you to track down the man they call Reg the Beer Guy. Let's listen to the interview. Here's Carter Lutz and Reggie.
So without further ado, if you go to enough ballparks, you start to notice the regulars, the diehard fans, the superstitions, the people who keep the score like it's game seven. But we've got someone on the open mic segment today who is way more committed than that. He's not chasing foul balls, but he's chasing history. As we now welcome in, without further ado, the man, the myth, the legend, Reg the Beer Guy. Reggie, you are on your way trying to become the first beer vendor ever to work every MLB and NFL stadium. It's been one heck of a ride. How you doing?
Pretty good, man. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you having me on the show. That's correct. So yeah, my goal is to do every MLB and every NFL stadium as a beer vendor in the seats.
That's terrific. And interestingly enough, I go to the University of Miami. Your story started around the South Florida area. Can you tell us how you got jump started?
Yeah, sure. So I was working in banking around 2017 or so, and I was down in South Florida on vacation. I wanted to go to the All-Star game. The All-Star game was there at that time. I took a look at the ticket prices. I said, man, it's a little steep. I saw an ad online saying, you know, we're looking for people just to come work the All-Star game, just an open call like that, and signed up, went, and they told me I was going to be the hot dog guy. You know, I says, cool, you know, a couple days, the celebrity game, the derby, and the All-Star game, you know, 3 days, what could go wrong? And turns out I fell in love with the job. You know, it was a great gig. Had a lot of fun with the fans. And by the end of it, I was like, you know what? Where's the next opportunity?
Yeah. So you don't see a lot of stars or a lot of personalities who are vendors, but you get that sense when you're there, when you're at the games that, you know, these guys know what's up. These guys are a joy to be around.
For sure.
Can you describe your passion behind all this as something that started just as a side hustle?
Yeah. It started kind of on a whim. And after that All-Star game, actually, I did a regular Marlins game. And that was quite the difference there to see between, you know, the fan base and the All-Star game and what a regular Marlins game was like. Kind of a little more of a more realistic view of what vending is like. And despite that, I still fell in love with it. And I was like, you know what? Where can I find more of this? And just being with the fans, like I said, just being able to be a part of the game, being up close to the game. I was never a great, you know, baseball player myself or football player, but like I said, I've always loved the sport, and just to be up close and personal with the game and still be able to make a living at the same time has been great. So,
and for us here at Sportscaster, we want to be a part of the game, and we don't have the athletic ability, as you just mentioned, to get on the field. So we're finding unique ways to get involved with the game. With you yourself and your specific mission, going to every ballpark, going to every NFL stadium, how did that specifically become your goal?
Well, like I said, I started doing a few stadiums here and there. After I did Florida, I came back up north. I did some work with Cleveland. I did some work with Washington, a few teams. And then it dawned on me. I was like, you know what? Has anybody ever actually done this before? And like, what would it take to get to every single stadium? So it kind of came across my mind as something interesting. And then it just kind of started one stadium after another, getting closer and closer to the goal before I said, you know what? That's the end goal here. Try to get to everyone.
And sports is really, you know, a big part of sports are the people involved, the relationships you make. Can you touch on that and how that's played a part in your journey?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, you get to know a lot of the season ticket holders, some of the regulars, people that are there every day. You get to know some of the team staff as well, which is pretty cool. You just kind of see what goes into making events work on so many levels.
And for you, what stadiums do you have left? Do you need to check off?
Yeah, absolutely. So for MLB, I'm only missing two. I'm missing Fenway, which I should have the approval to do this year. And the toughest one is going to be Toronto because it's a little more challenging because it's international. You got to get some, you know, the proper paperwork, some visas to actually be able to work in Canada. So I'm knocking on that door trying to get in. We'll see how close I can get. But that's the only two for MLB I'm missing. For the NFL, I'm just simply missing the Minnesota Vikings to complete the journey.
Well, that's doable.
Yeah.
I feel like NFC North, we can make that happen.
Yes.
For you and your journey, when you complete this, what's kind of your thought process about how you want to handle it and maybe go public with it and make it a real story and something that people can be inspired by?
You know what? A lot of people ask me the same thing. And I feel like as long as you're not actually there, you still have that desire to continue. And I realize, you know, I can't probably continue traveling at this pace forever. But vending is something I always want to keep in my life and something that I want to do. I enjoy it. It doesn't feel like work. I feel like I'm, you know, like I said, I feel like I'm at the game and I'm enjoying myself and earning a living in the process. So it really doesn't feel like work, especially baseball per se, because I feel like with baseball, vending, I feel like goes hand in hand with the fan experience. And I feel like during the COVID years when there wasn't vending and fans first started coming back, a lot of fans were asking for the vendors to be back. They were like, you know what? It doesn't feel like baseball without somebody yelling out here, you know, cold beer or hot dogs or something like that. So I feel like it's really ingrained in the baseball experience.
We're here with Reg the Beer Guy, a man trying to do all 30 MLB ballparks, all 30 NFL stadiums as a vendor. Was being a vendor, was that kind of environment, the vendors shouting, being a part of the atmosphere at ball games, was that a reason you think why you fell in love with it?
Yeah, exactly. I feel like just being there, being a part of the big events, especially I feel like the Super Bowls, the NBA Finals, Stanley Cup. I've gotten to do all four of the major championships, the World Series. There's nothing quite like it just to be there. And, you know, everybody's watching this moment and you get to actually be a part of it. And, you know, nothing can replace that.
Unbelievable. And an unbelievable story. A unique story, a man trying to become the first vendor ever to work all 30 ballparks in the MLB, all 30 stadiums in the NFL. We thank you for your time, Reggie. Your story is inspirational. It's different. And it's a new way to look at sports in a different lens. So we appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your perspective.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, man. Hope to see you at a Tigers game this year.
Thank you, Reggie.
You got it. Take care.
That was Sportscaster.com's Carter Lutz and Reg the Beer Guy. Such a cool story. 30 MLB ballparks, 30 NFL stadiums. And I know if you're listening, you're saying, wait, I thought there were 32 NFL teams. There are. But the New York Giants and the Jets, they obviously share MetLife Stadium. And the LA Rams and the LA Chargers share SoFi Stadium. So 30 NFL stadiums to complete the tour. And only three venues left for Reggie. Fenway in Boston, Rogers Center in Toronto, and U.S. Bank Stadium, the home of the Minnesota Vikings. Our next interview, I think you'll really like. This is a young man that I was fortunate to meet 10 years ago already at a Make-A-Wish event at the Palace of Auburn Hills. His name's Glenn Ratledge. He's from Brownstown Township, which is a Detroit suburb. And when Glenn was very little, 14 months old, he had his first unexplained seizure. And these seizures were continuous, and they were life-threatening, especially being such a tender age. And he was diagnosed with tuberous sclerosis. And that's where benign tumors can grow in the brain or other organs in the body. In Glenn's case, it was the brain, and it brought on these epileptic seizures. Tuberous sclerosis is a lifelong condition, and it can cause developmental delays. Doctors monitored, and then they managed the symptoms for some time until Glenn got into elementary school. And that was when his mom made a difficult decision of having him undergo brain surgery at Mott Children's Hospital in Ann Arbor. Neurosurgeon would remove the tumor with the hopes that it would eliminate the epilepsy, but at what cost? One of the main concerns was potentially Glenn losing his vision, but it was a risk they felt they had to take. So they took it. And you know what? Glenn did not lose his vision, and he has not had a seizure in almost 14 years. Glenn is now working as a locker room court assistant with the Detroit Pistons. Glenn Ratledge, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, bud, you remember the first time we met?
Yes, I do. November 17th, 2015, against Cleveland.
And how did we meet?
We were courtside and we were on the first row and you stopped by and was like, hey, we want to do a little interview real quick, and did it before the game.
Yeah. Thought you nailed it. Thought you nailed the interview that day, you know? So part of your story, it was a unique story that we had learned about at that time. For our listeners that are just getting to know you for the first time, what was it that brought us together and how you got connected with the Pistons?
Well, I was a Make-A-Wish kid and contacted the Pistons at the time, and they said, hey, they would like to do a Make-A-Wish, and they did it for me, and it was November 1st, 10 years ago, and I got to see practice and the players and coaches, and they invited me to a private practice to see what it's like, and they invited me to a game, and that's how me and you met.
That's how we met, and it was when you were very little. You went to University of Michigan Mott Children's Hospital for emergency surgery. I know you don't remember that time. Obviously, you've been able to tell that story a couple times now, but what have you been told? What are your memories of that experience of going through what at the time was, you know, a pretty serious surgery for you and for your family?
Yeah, well, at the time, we didn't know if I was going to see normally after the surgery, see my peripheral vision, like the side vision. It was a tough time.
And how old were you when you underwent your first surgery?
9
years old. And since that surgery, so obviously you guys were very hopeful, scary point in time for sure. Since that time though, seizure free?
Yes, 15 years, knock on wood. It's impressive, yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And as you mentioned, you know, with the risk of that surgery could cause potential issues with peripheral vision and I imagine a whole byproduct of things that could happen. Now, here we are all these years later, you're standing on the floor courtside every home game for the Detroit Pistons, rebounding for some of the biggest stars in the game. Could you ever have imagined at that time that you would be doing what you're doing now?
I honestly wouldn't. When I started, I was thinking like, am I really here? And I'm actually here doing my dream job and helping out, meet some new people and make new friends. And we all connect really well and became really close with the organization.
Yeah, I see it obviously every day when I'm there. I see that you have like, you develop a personal relationship with these guys. Obviously, you're there to help them get ready for the games. How did it come about from being a Make-A-Wish young person to have an opportunity to go see a game? How did it go from that to then being employed by the team? And now, like I said, now in your fifth season.
Well, after Make-A-Wish, I started talking to the equipment manager for like, say, 6 years on Instagram. We talked for a while and communicated for a couple years and got along really well. And he remembered when I was a Make-A-Wish kid and we stayed in touch over the years. And he offered me a job one day and said, hey, would you like to work for the Pistons? And I was like, yes, I would. And here I am.
Here you are.
Yeah.
The equipment manager, John Commodores, a great guy. And he's been at it for a long time. Every year that I've been there, this is my 12th season with the team, your fifth. Kong's been there. This is, nickname is Kong.
Yeah.
He's been there longer than both of us combined. I know that much. How would you describe what your typical game day responsibilities are and how they've evolved into the responsibilities that you now have?
Well, when I'm at the games, I prepare the court, I set the balls up for the players and put whatever needs to get out, like during the game, like the pads or towels ready, and do some stuff on the court. And during the game, I do like the towel job. So like when a player's done, I grab it and take it back to get some laundry and come back out and see if they need help with any more assistance.
Sure.
During the game, I bring some warm-up clothes. I take them with me and take them back to the locker room and put them on their seat.
Very cool. So you get the whole behind-the-scenes all-access pass.
Yeah.
I know you have a good relationship with Cade Cunningham, and I imagine all the guys, but are there a couple players when you think over the last couple of years that you've really gotten to know and gotten to like?
I have a lot of great relationships with the players. The great thing is we're all close, like a family.
I love it, man.
Kate, me and him get along really well, and I get along with all of them.
Obviously, the team's rolling right now. There are a lot of big Pistons fans out there. I know you're a fan through and through.
Yeah.
I know you remember this, but the Pistons set the NBA mark for 28 losses in a row, and I don't know that many people thought that this team was going to be this good this quickly since that time. How much fun has it been being a part of a winning organization, being a part of that atmosphere, one of the highest attended NBA arenas in the league this year?
Well, from that time, it was like tough to tell because we all start off bad at the beginning of the year. Then injuries happened and that messed the chemistry up with the injuries and that made things not go well for the season. The following year, we gone to the playoffs with JB and the new crew and the new players and the young core we have. There's a lot of bright future in these players, you know.
I feel like they do. I feel like you do too. I know that when you were going through everything that you had to go through as a young man, you've always had this positive outlook, right? A positive mindset. Where did that come from? And how easy or how difficult is it to maintain positivity when you're going through what to a lot of people would be a very difficult time?
I always try to like keep my mind happy and not get distracted. And I always stay busy on the stuff that I enjoy doing and staying active and try and put a smile on my face every day, you know, no matter what situation it is.
Well, you're always smiling every time I see you.
Yeah.
That's good. How important has it been? You know, you have a sister and obviously your mom, to have a support system like that, that you can lean on in tough times.
It's great having that support because they were always there and they still are. And it's still hard to believe that they've gone through the times that I've been through in the past and we've all been through it and things are a better outcome.
Yeah, that's everything, man. We're talking with Glenn Ratledge, who's one of the Pistons ball boys, also works heavily with the game day, part of the courtside crew, getting all the materials ready for the guys, in addition to rebounding for the pregame work. I know you yourself, Glenn, even though you're not in the NBA, you are in the NBA, but you're not an NBA player, but your love of the game, man, I've seen some clips. You can play. I know you play basketball all the time, whether it's raining, snowing, sleeting, shining, whatever. What are some of the benchmarks or some of the records that you've been able to accomplish?
Well, I would say the career points, but in three-pointers, say like how LeBron is at 50-plus. Right now, in three-pointers, I'm at 56,000-plus right now. So I still keep going when it's raining, little snow shower, and I go to the court once, three or four times a month. Depends how busy we are. I shoot three-pointers for 3 hours straight, running back and forth with no rebounder. Shooting, no rebounder, just running back and forth.
56,000 makes?
Yeah, 56,700.
Oh my
God. This past Thursday, so I made 500 more again.
In a day?
Yeah, in 3 hours.
Oh my gosh. When does it end?
Well,
100,000?
I would say probably maybe say 60,000, 70,000, you know. Then after that, go back to layups or something like that. You don't want to get bored doing the same thing. Try something new again.
I understand. Well, that's good work ethic. You got to stay with it. Shoot or shoot.
Yes.
All right. Lastly, and I appreciate you coming on the show, and I look forward to seeing you again, obviously, at all Pistons home games. You can look for Glenn Ratledge working the baseline there. When you look at a dream scenario for you, I always think in this position for me, you know, this is like my dream job, being able to cover the Detroit Pistons and be able to do it in the capacity that I do. What would be your advice for other younger people that may have aspirations and maybe who have gone through something at a point in time where they said, well, Glenn, that might not be realistic to be on an NBA court with balls flying and all that stuff based on a previous condition. And you said, well, we'll try it. But what would your advice be to others that aspire to do great things?
Well, I would say if they're going through the same situation like I did, is I just keep my head up and look day by day and just make sure I heal quick to get back to the stuff that I love doing and not letting it ruin my life. Just stay positive and look into the future and you'll find something you'll enjoy doing when you recover from the process and the procedure.
Yeah. You'd be like Glenn Ratledge one day. One of my favorite guys, man. I appreciate you being on the show. Glenn Ratliff's now in his fifth season working with the Detroit Pistons. A big part of the success over there and a big part of my life now that we've known each other for 10 years.
It's crazy to think.
It is crazy to think, and I look forward to the next 10.
Thanks for having me.
You got it, buddy. I'll see you at Little Caesars Arena sometime soon. And if you at home make it down to a Pistons game, keep your eyes peeled for Glenn, who'll be down there on the sidelines, on the baseline, and you can see him as well. What a great young guy. What a story. Glenn Ratliff, always rooting you on every step of the way, and very fortunate that our paths crossed when they did. You know, I don't know how you feel about artificial intelligence or AI, ChatGPT. I have a friend of mine, actually, who launched his own company website using ChatGPT, AI, the use of AI. And something I hadn't really given a lot of thought to was how AI could be used in modern-day coaching. It's a fascinating thought. And for more on that, we welcome in one of our newest Sportscaster members. Her name is Sierra Brooks. She's a senior at Ferris State. She's studying television and digital media production. Here's Sierra on AI in coaching.
Hi there. Welcome to Sportscaster. My name is Sierra Brooks, and today I am going to be talking about AI coaching in the sports world. So as we know, AI can do very incredible things. It's a very talked about subject. It's all over the news. But something that I've been seeing recently is AI in a coaching context. I want to try to talk about how AI is used in sports and how valuable it is to athletes and even coaches, and what are some of the benefits on athletes on all different types of levels. AI coaching combines computer vision, machine learning, and mobile apps to analyze these movements that players are doing. Machine learning is an algorithm that detects patterns in collected data and also can suggest personalized drills. If a baseball player is consistently opening up their hips, machine learning can actually flag this and maybe suggest a different exercise for this player. I think this is super cool, and I think it's super useful. There are several AI tools that demonstrate the practical applications of AI and how it's getting used in the sports world today. Home Court One is a NBA basketball app. This uses a phone camera to track shot attempts and dribble counts. This also delivers real-time audio and visual feedback. I think this is super cool, and I think that it's really interesting to see that AI can do this and how far it has come in the past 3 to 4 years. There's one called Swing Vision, and this is designed for tennis and pickleball players, and this tracks strokes and shot placement and helps athletes understand their tactical decisions. Blast Motion, this focuses on swinging sports like baseball and golf and measures their swing speed, timing, and angles to improve their mechanics on their body. For combat sports, Jabber uses computer vision. They generate stats for these players in assistant scoring. Now, these tools can help the coaches get better insights on their players. It doesn't have to be college or professional. It can be youth. It can be amateur, any type of high school sport even. Some of these can be only accessible in high-end type of environments like those collegiate athlete levels. And now, since they're so accessible, you could just download them on your phone. I think AI coaching is particularly important because it makes high-level training, like I said, more accessible. These tools and analytics were once used for professional athletes, now can be used by these amateurs and recreational athletes, often at a very minimal cost. Wearables like the Apple Watch, combined with an AI flagging system, can really show the athlete if they're fatigued, if they're overtraining, and different type of movement patterns that they're doing. This can also reduce injury risk, which is obviously super important. And research shows that AI-assisted training can also improve skill acquisition more than just traditional coaching alone. Now, while AI coaching offers a lot of benefits, there are a lot of concerns that critics are questioning. One major worry is an over-reliance to AI that can undermine the human support and the human elements that coaching has involved in it. Sports are not obviously only about technique, but there's emotional support, there's leadership, and there's strategic thinking. As we know, AI can't feel, they can't really support you in that type of way, but it is such a powerful tool that some people are wondering if it's really going to replace coaching. I think the consensus on AI is generally positive, but people just need to be cautious of it. Most expert coaches and sports scientists agree that it is a very powerful tool and that it should be used, but it is just recognized that it's something that we all need to just be aware of. And it's best used as a supplement, but not as a replacement for traditional coaching.
That was Sierra Brooks, a senior at Ferris State University on AI being used in coaching. You know, as we know it, the world is changing, the advances in technology, new data available, and it feels like the advances are happening so fast. And I hadn't given AI a ton of consideration when it comes to sports, but, you know, obviously analytics have been such a huge part of sports, but this type of data is something even deeper. And I think the interesting thing that Sierra brought up is, you know, how coaches go about using that data. At the end of the day, there is emotional support that's needed. A coach is still a coach. Not everything can be run by computers or be all computerized or just, you know, artificial intelligence. And, you know, I think to her point, AI is not going to replace coaching, but it can be an effective tool. And I think it's something that, again, it's upon us now. And as we move forward, as these advances continue to come, something we'll continue to follow throughout the world of sports. That is going to do it for this week's show. I want to thank all of our guests, Sierra Brooks from Ferris State on AI and coaching. I want to thank Glenn Ratledge, tuberous sclerosis as a young boy, now working with the Detroit Pistons. It's a great story. Carter Lutz from the University of Miami for catching up with Reg the Beer Guy, following his quest to work all 30 MLB and 30 NFL stadiums. Robert Hindeland and Taryn Fritching on the fastest growing sports in the world. We've covered some ground this week, there's no question, and we hope you learned a little something. We always appreciate you tuning in every week here on Open Mic. And until next time, wish you all the best as we head into the end of the December calendar and we get ready to turn the page into January here before too long. So until next time, I'm Johnny Kane with Sportscaster's Open Mic. Godspeed.